In a logo, the sun sets over low hills and the twinkling city lights below. Hollywood spotlights turn on throughout the city. As they crisscross their shining skyward beams, our view roves to a towering block of gold letters, Fox Searchlight Pictures. More words appear, a News Corporation company. Now, white titles float on a black screen. Fox Searchlight Pictures presents, in association with Such Much Films and Rhino Films, John Hawks, Helen Hunt, and William H. Macy, The Sessions, Moon Bloodgood, Annika Marks, Rhea Perlman, W. Earl Brown, Robin Weigert, Blake Lindsley, Ming Lo, Jennifer Kumiyama, Rusty Schwimmer, James Martinez with Adam Arkin. Now, a man lying on a motorized gurney travels across a brick walkway.
Mark O'Brien has been going to UC Berkeley since 1978. That's O'Brien in the motorized gurney heading for class last week. He had polio when he was 6 years old. The disease left his body crippled, but his mind remained sharp and alert. And since he wanted to be a writer, Mark O'Brien entered Cal to major in English and learn his trade.
Now the gurney rolls in a crosswalk and on stage at a graduation.
He wrote this poem for us about school here and about graduation.
Graduation. Today I hear the crowd's applause. Receive congratulations from my friends. Today I ask if I've found a place among the rest who studied, read, wrote, and passed the test in cap and gown. Today, I hope you see a man upon this stage.
Mark O'Brien teaches us that courage and perseverance overcome obstacles. With Mark O'Brien at UC Berkeley, Bill Hillman, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
More credits. Casting, Ronnie Yeskel, CSA. Music by Marco Beltrami. Now, at night, a cat scurries across the pavement. The cat enters a darkened room through a window and then walks across a counter. A small dial glows under an orange light. A mechanical pump rises and falls. The cat jumps to the floor and walks past the pump. An iron lung takes up most of the room. Mark sleeps in the cylindrical metal chamber. His head protrudes to the right at an awkward angle.
Breathing. Look, you. This most excellent canopy, the air, presses down upon me at 15 pounds per square inch. A dense, heavy, blue-glowing ocean, teasing me with its nearness and immensity. And all I get is a thin stream of it. A finger's width of the rope that ties me to life.
The cat jumps up and trots the length of the iron lung that lands beside Mark's headrest. Its tail swishes along Mark's face and he opens his eyes. The cat jumps to the floor and crosses to a food bowl. Mark wrinkles his nose.
Shit. Okay. Just focus. Scratch with your mind.
His lips remain closed.
Okay, your mind.
The cat trots away.
Scratch with your mind.
He looks at a wall where framed pictures hang. The cat sits in a chair. The sun begins to rise, casting light on its tawny fur. The brown-haired man looks at the cat.
Good morning.
On the wall, an oval-shaped devotional painting of Mary and the Sacred Heart hangs beside a smaller black-and-white photo of a boy on the beach. Now, a plump woman plods up to a two-story house fronted by overgrown trees. Words appear, Berkeley, California, 1988. She enters the gate and walks to the porch, where four white mailboxes hang by the front door. She struggles to unlock it, then enters. Inside, Mark's eyes dart around.
Good morning.
You're late.
She takes off her hat and plops down her purse, then raises a paper window shade. Now, she jostles his head as she gives him a bed bath.
Joan, I swear this was one crazy bitch who'd swing me about enough to scare me, but careful enough so she could say, you know, what was all the yelling about? You polios are screamers. Always were.
She rubs his chest with a sponge.
I didn't say a word, but typed my skinny novel in my head and thought about revenge.
Workmanlike, she rubs the sponge on his stomach and down toward his groin. She stops and looks from his groin to his face. He shifts his eyes away from her and swallows. Now, she wheels Mark feet first on the gurney down the sidewalk.
Would you mind if I asked you a favor?
You need help moving furniture?
She furrows her brow.
I need an advance on my pay, like, 2 weeks. Well, that's not exactly asking too much, is it?
What if you don't last another 2 weeks?
She looks down at him, then sighs and looks away.
It was a real drag that I was no longer allowed to use my other gurney, the self-propelled one. It had caused a couple of spectacular accidents. Basically, in spite of all the mirrors, I couldn't see where I was going.
Now she pushes him through the doors of a church. Later, Mark lies on the gurney behind the pews. A white plastic tube rests in his mouth. A shaggy-haired middle-aged priest speaks to the sparse congregation.
It was Elizabeth and her absolute faith that gave Mary the courage she was lacking. And she gave thanks, saying, "My soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit hath rejoiced in God my Savior." May the Spirit of the Lord be amongst you and remain with you always.
He blesses them with the sign of the cross.
I'm definitely a true believer, but I believe in a God with a sense of humor, a wicked sense of humor. One who created me in his own image.
Now the priest approaches Mark.
I don't think we've met. I'm Father Brendan.
He extends to shake hands, then looks down the length of Mark's body and drops his hand.
I'm Mark O'Brien. I knew Father Seamus very well. I'm sorry that he's not here anymore.
As are many others. I'll do my best to fill his shoes. I understand you'd like me to hear your confession?
Yes, I would. I told my attendant to come back in half an hour. Is that okay?
The priest glances around.
I'm in no rush.
I can be a bit time-consuming, but I'm worth the trouble.
A grin crosses Father Brendan's face.
I'm here for you, Mark.
The priest places a chair beside the gurney and sits down.
Okay. This is not exactly a confession. I haven't yet done the deed. I was sort of hoping to get a quote in advance.
Father Brendan smiles.
What's on your mind?
The most immediate thing on my mind would be one of my attendants, Joan. I'm thinking of getting rid of her. It's an evil thought, but I can't help it.
Is she dishonest or incompetent?
No, neither of those. She looks at me the wrong way. It's that you need me more than I need you look. I'd like to show her she's wrong just for the evil satisfaction it will give me. Is that a sin, Father?
The priest raises an eyebrow and shrugs.
Well, it obviously troubles you.
Yeah, it troubles me a lot, because what if it's really just a power trip? Yeah? Yeah, me against her. Me against the world.
I really wouldn't worry about that. The question is whether you like having her around.
I can't stand her.
Well, then get rid of her. If I were in a position to choose, I'd find someone nice, even if it was a power trip.
Then I have your blessing to fire her?
Unofficially, yes.
It's good enough for me.
Now a typewriter pecks out the word poet. Mark lies in the iron lung with the typewriter by his head. Wearing glasses, he uses a mouth stick to strike each key. Now in a hallway, a raven-haired young woman picks a yellow index card off a bulletin board. A man in a pink unitard brushes by her on a unicycle. She glances at him, then reads the card in her hands. Poet/journalist seeks assistant with advanced sense of humor. She smiles.
Amanda would have been a pretty girl to touch, to hold, to kiss. Do you have any experience?
She sits in Mark's apartment.
No, none at all.
That sounds perfect.
He beams. Now she tentatively unlatches the iron lung and starts to slide Mark out of it.
So how long can you stay?
3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Depends on how much fun I'm having.
As she glided through crowds of lives, she couldn't leave me lying there, dried out bubblegum stuck on the underneath of existence.
Now in a park.
She took me on a picnic once, with a boyfriend and another couple. Lust crackled in the air. Now what did the boyfriend think? That I was in his way?
A young man watches Amanda hand feed Mark on a picnic blanket.
I'm always in somebody's way, I thought. The sun in my eyes.
Mark smiles and closes his eyes. Her hand caresses his chest. Now Amanda and her boyfriend face each other in a bathtub.
And what? And do you touch him?
What do you think? Yeah, I do everything. You have other questions?
He juts out his jaw.
Gross.
What?
She sits up.
What'd you say?
Okay, look, no need to be defensive, okay? I'm not exactly threatened
yeah,
by this guy.
Why not? God, he's much more a man than you are.
She gets out and grabs a towel. Now Amanda shaves Mark's face.
So what does your boyfriend think of me?
He's an asshole. Doesn't matter what he thinks of you.
I'm interested in the opinion of an asshole.
He thinks that you are some kind of Svengali, and you're gonna hypnotize me into your cult.
He's right.
He says he can already see changes.
In a fantasy, Amanda arches against a stripper pole in black lingerie.
Her perfect pale skin. Her Tudor court face. Her strong, fleshy legs drove me to ecstasies of despair.
Now she wears a modest blouse and massages him.
All I wished for were hands that moved. Just to touch her.
She kisses his brow.
That would have been enough. So with a gentle, fearless heart, she took me in. I thrived in her garden and wanted more.
Now Amanda wheels him down a city sidewalk into a vintage clothing store. She grabs a camel-colored western shirt from a rack.
This you must have.
He mouths something.
What?
She leans over, her ear close to his lips.
I love you.
She smiles sweetly at him, then her expression saddens. She straightens up and looks down at the shirt. He watches her. She returns to the rack. His face grows sad as he looks down. Her hand briefly covers her mouth, then flies to her cheek.
Did she reciprocate your feelings?
Now at the church.
She didn't seem to.
You know, sometimes people can be very shy about their emotions.
Well, in case she didn't get it the first time, I told her again that I was in love with her and I wanted to marry her, thinking it might swing things.
Did it?
Yeah. She left.
At the clothing store, Amanda lets go of the shirt. With a concerned look, she returns to the gurney. She wheels him toward the door with a furrowed brow.
Amanda could have been a pretty girl. To touch, to hold, to take to bed.
Father Brendan hangs his head.
I wish I knew what to say to you. I mean, welcome to the human race. Every day somebody breaks somebody else's heart.
He paces a little. Mark gives a tight nod and swallows.
And as I said, I'm here for you. I just wish I had something more useful to offer. All I have are these vague ideas about life and death that we priests are equipped with. Have you considered sharing your feelings with a therapist?
Not really.
Father Brendan shrugs.
Father?
Yeah.
I think I need a hug.
A hug?
Yeah.
Smiling, he slips his arms under Mark and rests his head on his chest.
There you go.
Now, a burly man with a mustache retrieves the newspaper from Mark's front yard. He looks it over as he heads back toward the door. He turns and sees a young woman with glasses, her hair in a braided ponytail.
Hi. Vera?
Yes.
Oh, hi, I'm Rod.
Hi.
I usually do 4 to midnights.
Vera nods.
But we could switch if necessary.
She looks down at a piece of paper in her hands and follows him inside. She wears a backpack. Now seated, she takes in the room, then sets her jaw and looks squarely at Mark in the iron lung.
Have you had any experience?
Some.
Would you get that, please?
Hello?
She listens, then lowers the receiver, covering the mouthpiece.
It's Sandy from Pacific News Service.
Could you press that button and put it on speakerphone, please? Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. I have a new attendant. She answered the phone. Her name's Vera.
Welcome, Vera.
Vera raises her eyebrows.
Thank you.
Mark. We're doing a series of articles that I think might interest you. The subject is sex and the disabled. It would involve interviewing people in the Berkeley area.
Well, why now?
Because we've got the money now. But if you're working on something else, then we can talk about it later.
Vera watches him through her round-framed glasses. She twists her lips.
No. Now is fine.
Great.
Now Amanda wheels Mark up the drive of a ranch-style house.
There was no escaping it.
She pushes the gurney up a ramp.
A door had opened that I could not close. And in invisible writing it said, "Do not enter."
Now, in a spacious living room, a paraplegic woman in a wheelchair talks to them.
Most positions like that one are pretty much impossible. I don't know if you can quite visualize it, but it's called a lateral or a sideways reverse cowgirl.
Vera squints.
It's okay. It's just a question of depth of penetration for most people, like my partner, for instance. It doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I get just as excited when he licks my nipples, when he bothers to do that.
Vera raises her brows. Her mouth hangs open.
I think your tape's run out.
Vera jerks to attention. She gets out of her chair and crouches over the tape recorder on the coffee table. Mark watches her fiddle with the recorder, then sit back down.
Do you want to continue?
That's okay, Carmen. I think I've actually got enough to work on. Thanks.
Okay, well, give me a call if you need anything, and let me get you Greg's number, because he's full of things you wouldn't believe were possible.
Another house.
Oral sex is a matter of taste. And one thing that really works in my favor is that I smoke so much weed that my taste buds are pretty jaded. And this gives me a great deal of stamina in the tongue department. And stamina is key in cunnilingus.
The shaggy blonde smirks at Vera from his wheelchair. Mark notices as she lowers her head. At night, Mark and the cat look at each other in the dark.
Who are these people? I feel like an anthropologist interviewing a tribe of headhunters.
Now, Father Brendan finds Mark in the church.
Hi. It's good to see you. How are things?
Well...
Sorry.
He moves to Mark's right side.
Things are a little confusing at the moment. I would appreciate your advice as a friend, if you know what I mean.
Sure. And I understand what you mean.
Do you remember at one point you suggested I might see a therapist?
Yes.
Well, one way or another, it's a long story. I ended up seeing a therapist. A particular sort of therapist. A sex therapist.
Now, Mark lies in the iron lung.
Good morning, UC Berkeley.
May I please speak to someone in the Center for Sexuality and Disability, please?
I'm sorry, sir. The Center for Sexuality and Disability has been shut down.
Thank God.
Sir?
I'm sorry to have bothered you.
It's no bother.
He bites on the mouth stick.
Oh, sir, before you go, I can give you a phone number for one of the therapists who used to work there. Would you like that?
Now, in the elevator of an older office building.
Everything's gonna work just fine.
I don't like this. Let's forget about it.
Mark, do you want to see this woman or not?
No.
Oh, it's too late.
What floor?
18th floor.
So.
Now, a red-haired woman sits on the edge of her desk.
What sort of chance do you give me?
Of achieving your romantic fantasy? Very small to minute.
Oh, look, you don't have to pull any punches. You can be direct with me.
Mark, I'm just a humble sex therapist. I try to help people with sex problems that can be addressed. Your problem, I understand, is that you've never had sex.
He drops the tube from his mouth.
That's correct.
Would I be correct in assuming you're unable to masturbate?
Correct.
Has anyone done it for you?
No.
Have you ever asked anyone?
Not specifically. I asked someone to marry me once. She declined. Has that come close to masturbation?
She chuckles.
You know, being with the person you love is not the only way of expressing yourself sexually. There are people called sex surrogates.
Oh? My penis speaks to me, Father Brendan.
Now, in church.
Sometimes I ejaculate during a bed bath in front of my attendants. All I feel is shame and mortification, while other men apparently get pleasure. I'm sorry if I sound angry.
Don't worry about it. Go on.
Mark winces as he turns his head. Using his tongue, he grabs the plastic tube and puts it in his mouth for a moment.
This therapist suggested I could work with a sexual specialist. Have sex with a person known as a sex surrogate who would be sensitive to my unusual needs. I've been giving it some thought,
Hold on. What do you mean, have sex?
Well, when a man and a woman love each other very much.
No, I understand what it... Are we talking about sexual intercourse?
I think so.
Outside marriage?
I did do my best on the question of marriage.
Father Brendan shifts from foot to foot.
What's the difference between this sexual specialist and a common prostitute?
I don't know, but I think there's a difference.
The priest opens his mouth to talk, then sits in a pew. He glances around with a furrowed brow. Watching him, Mark swallows hard.
How old are you?
38.
Why exactly now?
I never had any cash before. That's a major factor.
A woman genuflects.
Yeah, probably getting close to my use-by date.
Father Brendan turns to him with a concerned stare. Mark lifts his eyebrows, slightly grinning, and the priest shifts in his seat.
And this is what you want my advice on, fornication.
Your advice is a friend.
Do I have the deciding vote, so to speak?
Well, let's just say I value your advice just as much as I do the therapist's.
Father Brendan exhales a deep breath.
You're serious about this?
I think sex is a serious matter. It's one of the most persistent themes in the Bible. So, is it possible for me to know a woman in the biblical sense, so to speak?
Father Brendan gazes up.
And do I want to find out?
He rubs his face, then stands.
You want my opinion?
Please.
With his back to Mark, Father Brendan takes a few steps. He stops and looks up at a golden lacquered statue of Jesus. Mark swallows hard, keeping his eye on the priest. Father Brendan looks down and nods to himself.
In my heart, I feel like he'll give you a free pass on this one.
He glances back up at the statue and then faces Mark.
Go for it.
Huh?
Go for it.
Really?
Yes. If you feel up to it. Do you feel up to it?
To tell you the truth, I'm scared.
Well, then we should pray.
He moves around the gurney and takes Mark's hand. Holding it to his own heart, he glances at the statue and closes his eyes.
Sweet Jesus, Mark and I sit at your feet and pray that you bless this little journey. It's one small step for a man.
Now Rod wheels Mark on a sidewalk.
I really feel proud of myself. Imposing on someone I hardly know to fornicate in their home.
Get over it. It's perfectly normal.
Now, a Japanese-style door slides open.
Ta-da!
Wow.
Carmen wheels into her bedroom.
There are all sorts of useful things in that drawer over there if you guys feel like exploring.
That's okay. I'll bring my own sheets and towels.
No, everything will be provided. I'm really honored that you asked me, and it'll be great karma for the house.
Later.
Great karma for the house? My God, the pressure already. I can't stand it.
Rod smiles and pushes them down the sidewalk. Now, in a quaint one-story house with green siding, a young teen with dark curly hair answers the phone.
Hey, it's Tony.
Hi, this is Laura White. Is Cheryl in, please?
He calls outside.
Cheryl!
What is it?
Phone! She's coming.
Tony puts down the phone and walks away. A middle-aged blonde enters and removes her gardening gloves. She leans into him in the kitchen.
I'm not your girlfriend. When someone calls, particularly someone you don't know, you can use the word mom. Hello, this is Cheryl.
Hi, it's Laura.
I haven't heard from you for a while. How are you?
Pretty well. Look, I called to ask how you would feel about working with a severely disabled client.
Can you hold on 1 second?
Tony drinks from the milk carton.
Get a glass.
At home, Rod gives Mark a sponge bath on his iron lung bed out of the chamber. Rod hurries to the phone.
Hello, Mark O'Brien's phone.
He clicks a button on the phone.
Hi, this is Cheryl Cohen Green. May I speak to Mark?
Mark's eyes widen and he licks his lips nervously. Rod stares at him. Mark opens his mouth.
Could you hold a second? What am I doing here? Yes or no? Come on, make up your mind.
Breathing heavy, Mark looks at the phone.
Okay.
He nods softly and closes his eyes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, this is Mark.
Hi, Mark, this is Cheryl. Laura called to introduce you. I understand you'd like to meet, is that right?
Yes.
I could see you on the 13th at 11 o'clock. Would that be any good for you?
Rod raises his brow and nods encouragingly.
Yes, I think that would be
fine for me.
Where are you from?
Boston. You?
Salem.
Small world. So we'll
talk for a while to begin with, and then when you're ready, we'll start doing some body awareness exercises.
Mark purses his lips. At night, he stares at the Mary painting in the dark.
Holy Mother of God. What are body awareness exercises?
Now in the daytime, Vera arrives at Mark's front door and lets herself in with a key. Inside, she brings him two button-up shirts.
Which one?
Doesn't matter.
Will you stop acting like you're going to your own execution?
I'm not acting.
Vera tilts her head and tosses both shirts down. She marches away.
Okay, the purple one.
Now she wheels him to Carmen's.
Try and think about something else. Baseball, for example. That's what they usually tell boys to do.
Baseball. You mean like hope I make it to second base? That's helpful.
Okay, all right, be like that.
They reach the top of the ramp at Carmen's front door.
Maybe she forgot. Yeah, she forgot, or she got the date wrong. We should just forget it. Let's go back. Come on.
She has not forgotten. See?
Hi.
Hi.
Now Vera kneels beside Mark on the bed. She puts the plastic tube in his mouth. She moves toward the gurney and glances around the room, then pushes it against a wall. Carmen wheels to the entry on her electric wheelchair.
Okay, I'm going. I'll be back around 1, but if you guys are finished early, you can just let yourselves out. Okay?
Okay.
Have fun.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
Vera saunters to the bed and sits next to Mark. He spits out the tube.
What time is it?
She checks her watch, then sprays something in her hand.
12 after 11.
I think there's a strong possibility she's had second thoughts.
She rubs her palms together.
If she does arrive, she'd be perfectly within her rights to turn around and run.
She gently rubs his neck. Mark flashes a weak smile and exhales deeply. She eyes him for a moment, smiles sweetly, and then stands and adjusts her skirt. Gazing out the window, she crosses her arms and shifts her weight between her feet. Mark's chest slowly expands. His eyes widen. Vera smiles and walks away. Two large veins protrude in his forehead. He watches her go, blinks nervously, and swallows. Vera leads Cheryl to the bedroom. Cheryl enters and eyes her new client. She glances back at Vera, then stops near the bed, smiling.
Hi, Mark O'Brien.
Hi, Cheryl Cohen Green.
I'll be back in, say, 2 hours?
Yes, perfect.
Okay.
Vera leans forward, giving Mark a final smile, then grabs her bag from the floor and heads out.
So?
Your money's on the desk over there.
Cheryl turns to the desk.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
He winces and closes his eyes.
That was the wrong way to start off.
It really was. Shall we start again?
Please, you start.
She puts down her purse.
Although the aim is for us to have sex, I'm not a prostitute. You don't have to pay me up front. I have nothing against prostitutes, but there's a difference. We can talk about that later.
I'm sorry.
The other thing is, there's a limit to the number of sessions we can have. Did Lara mention that when you saw her?
I'm sorry. I don't remember.
The limit is 6, but that gives us plenty of opportunity to explore.
6.
So, I understand you're able to have an erection.
She removes her watch.
Yes, but not by choice.
Do you know how many men there are who would give anything for a natural erection? Is this your place?
No, it's a friend's. The only bedroom furniture I have at my place is an iron lung. I've been wondering maybe about possibly buying a futon. You know, in case the need arose.
Might be worth thinking about.
I've got the space, I think. It can be expensive, though, and I...
He takes a labored breath.
Futon, I mean, how much do you think a good one would cost?
Take a deep breath.
He inhales and closes his mouth. She stands with her hands on her hips.
And let go?
Do I seem anxious?
You do a little. So Laura tells me you're a poet. What's it like to be a poet?
She takes a seat.
That's a way of living inside your own head, which is where I spend most of my time.
But not today. Nice shirt, by the way.
He wears a paisley button-up.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you some basic questions, okay?
Sure.
Explain to me, so that I really understand, exactly what the iron lung is for.
That keeps me breathing. I could spend a few hours outside of it with my portable respirator, depending on how I feel, but I work and sleep in the iron lung.
She glances toward his gurney, then back at him.
And how do you feel right now?
Out of my league.
I meant your breathing.
Oh, fine. In fact, better than usual.
That's great. Shall we get undressed?
He stares at her, mouth slightly open.
Sure.
Cheryl kneels on the bed next to Mark and pulls his shirt tails out of his pants.
So it's good for me to...
She lets go of the shirt.
Did that hurt?
Not yet.
She nods, then starts to unbutton the top of his shirt.
Do you have any areas of unusual sensitivity? Any parts of your body you don't want me to touch?
I have normal sensitivity all over. I'm not paralyzed exactly. It's just my muscles don't work too good. But you can touch me anywhere.
That's great.
She lifts his right arm and pulls at the sleeve.
Ow! Oh. Ow! Stop, it hurts!
What's wrong?
It hurts, holy mother of God! Ah, my finger!
It's okay.
My fingers are caught!
It's okay, I've got it, I've got you. Don't worry.
Be careful, please.
She exhales deeply and looks down.
Mark, I'm going to be really careful with you. I don't want to hurt you or injure you in any way. And it's really not sexy when you yell at me, okay?
I won't yell at you anymore.
But you'll tell me, calmly, the minute something starts to hurt.
Yes.
Okay.
Cheryl gently lifts his arm.
Here we go.
She slides it out of the sleeve.
Piece of cake.
Cheryl carefully lays his arm along his body and then rolls off the bed. Mark's eyes follow her around the foot of the bed. Looking out of the corner of his eyes, he tries to keep her in view on his left side. She works on his left arm.
Nice shirt.
You already said that.
Did I?
Mark faces away from her in the natural direction of his angled head. She pulls the shirt off his shoulder. Gripping his wrist, Cheryl slides the sleeve over his stiff left hand and rests it on the bed.
Okay.
She moves to his feet.
I'm gonna slide these down.
Yeah, just be careful with my feet, okay? My feet. Be careful.
Hold your breath.
Okay. Whoa, hang on. Careful, that's okay.
Now, Cheryl enters the bathroom and stops in front of the mirror. Gazing at herself, she exhales a deep breath and nods slightly. In bed, Mark lies under the sheets. Cheryl dabs her face with a hand towel and looks in the mirror. Entering the bedroom, she removes her shirt, revealing her bra.
You ready?
Oh.
He looks toward the ceiling.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
She pulls down her jeans, revealing her panties.
So the difference between me and a prostitute is a prostitute wants you return business. I don't. I'm here to help you learn about your sexual feelings so you can share them with a future partner.
She gets naked.
Mark, I want you to tell me how it feels each time I touch a different part of your body, okay?
You know, whenever I'm naked, everyone else in the room is always dressed. And now that I'm in bed with another naked person, it's very confusing.
Why is it confusing?
I'd always expected that God or my parents would intervene to keep this moment from ever happening.
Not this time.
She strokes his chest.
So if something feels good, you tell me. Something is ticklish or bothers you, I want you to let me know. I don't want you to tolerate anything. Okay. I'm going to start with the top of your head.
Mark stares into her eyes as she runs her fingers through his lush, dark hair.
You have soft hair. It's really nice to touch. Does it feel good?
It does.
He smiles. She strokes his hair and continues down to his ear in one gentle, fluid motion. Her fingertips circle his ear and stop on the lobe, which she pinches softly and rubs.
That feels weird.
She pulls her hand away.
Weird good or weird bad?
She's weird.
Cheryl smiles. She continues, placing a hand on his head and moving to his chest. Her hand slides along his bony ribcage.
That's good.
Still good?
Everything good so far except the ear. Are these the body awareness exercises?
You're very clever to have worked that out.
People tell me I'm very perceptive.
Mark, would you like to see what I feel like?
He blinks softly.
Sure.
Cheryl nods and reaches down. She lifts his flat right hand and presses the fingers and palm to her cheek. She leans on her elbow and rubs the back of his hand into her naked breast. A small sensual grin grows on Mark's relaxed face as he watches his hand.
You touch one, you have to touch the other. It's sort of a rule.
She moves his hand to the other breast, and he swallows hard.
Good rule.
Are you wearing cologne?
Yes.
I like it. I don't usually like cologne, but I like that.
She rests his arm on the bed and reaches for his shoulder.
So, Mark, I'm going to move my hand along your body, down to your penis, and if you feel me...
He winces, and she removes her hand. She smiles.
Oh, nice job.
Now, in the church.
I thought there would be more to it. Not that it was unpleasant. After all, I was in bed with a naked woman. She complimented me on my shirt, my hair. She held my penis. I haven't even seen my penis for over 30 years.
Father Brendan raises his brow.
Am I sharing too much, Father?
No. I'm used to it.
Back in the bedroom, Cheryl, now fully clothed, takes the envelope from the desk and collects her belongings. Mark lies under the sheets, watching. She takes a planner from her purse and opens it.
So, next week. Friday, the 20th, same time?
That's good for me.
Next time we'll start to work on intercourse.
He presses his lips together.
Were you afraid of the thought of seeing me?
Okay, I was terrified.
You should be proud of yourself. You did great. We've made real progress.
Can I ask you something?
Sure. What would you like to ask?
Anything, really. Just tell me something about yourself. Anything.
Okay. I'm a very private person. I have a private life. I need you to be aware of that. But that's about it. This therapy's about you.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Perfect timing.
I hope you guys kept the noise down.
Cheryl smiles at Carmen, then leans in and touches Mark's arm.
See you then.
Now, Vera pushes Mark down a sidewalk on his gurney.
What is it like? How do you feel?
Cleansed and victorious.
Doesn't get any better than that.
How about your first time?
Ooh, let me think.
What was it like?
Wasn't all that pleasant.
Oh.
I mean, it was consensual and everything, and I was in love with the guy. His dick seemed enormous to me. I didn't think it would fit. It was scary. He was nice. I guess he couldn't help it.
Was he Chinese?
Are you kidding me? I only dated white guys in high school.
Why is that?
I don't know. Stick it to my mom and dad, I suppose.
Are they happy now you have a Chinese boyfriend?
They're happy. I'm happy.
What's his dick like?
Perfect size.
Why do you call it a dick instead of a penis?
Penis sounds like some vegetable you don't want to eat. Dick sounds like what it is.
Vera smiles as Mark stares into the sky.
The thing is, it was all over so damn quickly.
Yeah, tell me about it.
They continue down the sidewalk. Nighttime at home, Cheryl loads a tape into a handheld recorder.
Session. Mark O'Brien is the oldest of four children and raised Catholic. He was extremely nervous. He yelled a lot when I took off his shirt, but I think more out of fear than pain. He cannot masturbate, has had only the occasional kissing experience. He's capable of achieving an erection easily, but the unusual curvature of his body could be a serious obstacle to intercourse.
She stops the recorder and closes her notebook, then puts them both away in a desk drawer. Grabbing a keychain, she selects a small key and locks the drawer. The sexual surrogate grabs her glasses, turns off the lamp, and leaves her desk. Now she climbs into bed next to a husky, bare-chested man. She holds a book in her hand. Rolling over, he positions himself in the center of the bed and drapes an arm over her chest. She rubs a hand along his upper arm near a circular tattoo on his shoulder. She exhales a deep breath and closes her eyes.
I just started working with this gentleman who spends almost his entire life trapped in a big metal box.
He lies still and she leans closer.
Did you hear what I said?
He opens his eyes.
Yes. Yes. And you are a saint.
He kisses her cheek and snuggles his gray-haired head back into the pillow. Cheryl puts on her reading glasses and opens her book. Now, a book's page displays an image of a hand gripping a penis. The heading reads, "The Squeeze Technique." In his iron lung, Mark wears glasses and uses his mouth stick to turn the page. It shows a detailed diagram of female genitalia.
Sometimes the head of the penis may be too large to penetrate the vaginal opening smoothly, in which case the application of lubricant is recommended to avoid possible... Oh, my God.
He glares at the book. Now daytime, Rod wheels Mark down the sidewalk.
So, what's on the menu for today?
We're attempting intercourse.
The big one.
What do you think of it? Intercourse.
Overrated, but necessary. There's plenty of other ways of achieving the same result. Somehow you don't feel like you've done it till you've gone all the way in.
Mark looks up at Rod through his large sunglasses. Now, in Carmen's bedroom, Cheryl removes her pants. Mark lies beneath the sheets.
I want you to look at me this time.
He slightly opens his eyes.
Come on, give it a try. Open your eyes.
He opens them wider and turns his head. Cheryl smiles, removes her shirt, and then her underwear.
Do you like watching me undress?
I do.
She unhooks her bra and walks toward the bed, fully nude.
So from now on, you're going to start to listen to signals from your body. That way you'll be able to have some control.
Oh, God. Damn.
He clenches his teeth and trembles. In the church with Father Brendan.
I did it again. This time I ejaculated on her thigh.
The priest looks away and shrugs.
I felt cursed. That the whole enterprise was cursed. It seemed like a totally just punishment. God wasn't actually denying my sexuality. He was just pointing out to me how useless it was.
It's amazing to me how often God is brought into the sex act. I understand even among non-believers, the most common expression of sexual ecstasy is, "Oh, God."
He drops his smile, now in Carmen's bed.
Okay, I don't want to hear any more about God cursing you. I want the credit. It was my overpowering beauty that did it. It took you by surprise. Now, where were we?
What do you mean, where were we?
I'm going to touch you.
She reaches toward his groin.
I'm touching you. And when we both feel you're aroused, like now, I'm going to guide you inside me.
Is there anything I need to do?
Just close your eyes and feel your body. That's all you need to do.
He closes his eyes and envisions the diagram of female genitalia. As she straddles him, he pictures the book again.
It won't fit. It's not going to fit.
It will fit just fine.
Oh, it's dangerous. It's too big.
It's not too big. Relax.
No, it won't fit. It'll hurt.
Mark, stop. Stop. I promise you, nothing bad will happen. Let's try again while you're still hard.
He keeps his eyes on her, anxiously panting as she slowly remounts his body.
Shit.
Later, she lies next to him under the sheets.
I'm really sorry.
Stop being sorry. And stop reading those stupid sex manuals.
Mark stares at the ceiling.
There's still some time left. We could talk. Or you could suck my nipples. That went well. Or which would you like to do first?
Now Cheryl dictates in her backyard.
I believe the root of his anxiety is his parents and his religion. He believes he doesn't deserve sex. He believes he's responsible for his little sister's death at the age of 7 because his mother was too busy looking after him. We discussed his fantasies, which were mostly masochistic. Again, the idea of being punished. He has never seen female genitalia before and seems quite frightened at the thought of it.
Now in the church.
My worry now is that it's never going to happen. I'm never going to have intercourse with Cheryl or any other woman. Maybe intercourse would prove I was an adult. Maybe I don't want to cross that line. Maybe this is a bad idea.
He leans toward his respirator tube.
Do you want to know what I think?
Please.
The priest puts the tube in Mark's mouth.
Forget the psychobabble. I grew up on a farm. Even the animals need a couple of tries to get it right. May I suggest you try to enjoy it more? Don't worry about the technical stuff. You're a poet. Be romantic.
Now, a trolley car reaches the crest of a steep San Francisco street. Outside a clothing shop, Vera shows Mark some shirts.
Yeah.
She hangs the short-sleeved pullover back on the rack.
Maybe.
She keeps the short-sleeved button up and shows him a dark print long-sleeved shirt.
Yes. Thanks. That's good.
She examines the shirt and nods, then walks into the store. Now at home, Vera dresses Mark in his new long-sleeved shirt.
You nervous?
A little.
Want a spritz?
Yes, of course I would.
Vera grabs his cologne bottle. Using a hand to shield his face, she sprays his neck once. She grabs the gurney and wheels him from the room.
I have a good feeling about today. Very good feeling.
Good.
I had a terrible feeling it was never going to happen, but I think today's the day.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
Stop thinking about it.
Now, Vera pushes him up the ramp at Carmen's.
Couldn't have wished for nicer weather.
You're not listening, are you? Stop thinking about it.
Beautiful weather.
Vera stops at the door and listens. She shrugs to Mark, who tilts his head toward the noise. Carmen answers the door. Guests mingle in the room behind her.
Oh my God, Mark. I'm so sorry. I forgot.
Mark rolls his head to the side. Later, Cheryl stands with Mark and Vera in the driveway.
She was very apologetic. Look, it may not be exactly what we had in mind, but I noticed a couple of blocks from here, pretty nice motel. Might be worth checking out.
Why not?
Now, Vera and Cheryl wheel Mark outside the entrance of a motel lobby. An Asian male clerk behind the reception desk notices them through the window. Cheryl stays with Mark as Vera enters and approaches the desk.
Do you have anything on the ground floor?
I've got a single.
How much?
35 plus tax.
She looks down and nods.
My boss is the gentleman in the gurney. He's supposed to be having a therapy session right now, but the facility we normally use has some scheduling mix-up. We just need the room for 2 hours. Can you do 20 cash?
The clerk glances between Mark and Vera. Now he leads them down a sidewalk.
So there's a soda machine around the corner.
Thanks.
And an ice machine if you need it.
I'm sure it'll come in handy.
Thank you so much.
The clerk heads back to reception. Now in the room, they carefully lie Mark down on the bed. Vera adjusts his legs, then wheels the gurney into the corner.
That's it. Got a book to read. I'll be hanging around reception if you need me.
Thanks.
Vera smiles at Mark and leaves. As Vera closes the sliding glass door, Cheryl removes her blouse over her head and Mark's eyes dart about the room.
Very atmospheric.
Some people find motels exciting.
She drapes her blouse on the lamp.
You think I could be one of those people?
Of course.
Wearing jeans and her bra, Cheryl walks around the bed to Mark's left side. Sitting beside him, she places his hand on his stomach and touches his chest.
Nice shirt.
Is it racy and sophisticated?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
She unbuttons his shirt. In the lobby, Vera walks past the reception desk.
What's wrong with your boss?
She stops and approaches the clerk.
Basically, he can only move his head.
So, what sort of therapy are they doing?
She flashes a sly grin.
They're having sex.
You're shitting me.
Okay, I'm shitting you.
She walks away.
Oh no, come on, tell me for real. What are they actually doing?
She approaches.
Well, today after some appropriate foreplay, they're gonna try to achieve full penetration.
Looking off, she purses her lips and pats the desk, then walks away. The stunned clerk glances in the direction of the motel room. In the motel room, now naked, Cheryl straddles Mark's face. She winces.
Are you okay down there?
I'm choking.
She climbs off him.
Oh, my God.
She puts the tube in his mouth and sighs through pursed lips. His flushed face starts to relax.
I guess that's off the menu till further notice.
Mark spits out the respirator tube and closes his eyes. She moves the tube aside and lies belly down next to him. The gaunt man stares at the ceiling. Cheryl props up on her elbows.
Come on, lighten up.
The naked surrogate faces the pillow and exhales a deep breath.
Bonnie girl, won't you be my Bonnie girl?
Cheryl smiles.
My dad used to sing that to my little sister Karen before she died. She's kind of a sad little girl, didn't do much good. I'm really sorry that the last time I saw her, I fought with her, I made her cry.
Mark grins sadly. Cheryl looks thoughtful.
My parents could have left me in the nursing home, yeah. And they found out that the average life expectancy for polio in nursing homes was 18 months. They took me home. Gave me a life. Gave up theirs.
Mark, I'm just going to go to the bathroom for a quick pee. And when I come back, we're going to achieve full penetration. But before I go, I want you to close your eyes.
It's just a game.
It's not a game. Just do as I say. Close your eyes.
Mark closes his eyes and adjusts his head on the pillow. She reaches over and tenderly rubs his cheek with the back of her hand.
Picture yourself as a 6-year-old boy at the beach. Can you do that?
The screen flashes white to a young boy in the sand.
Yes. Very easily.
Describe some of your feelings.
I feel exhilarated.
A little girl takes the boy's hand and they run down the shore.
Running along the Atlantic Ocean. I feel the wind. Wet sand between my toes.
Do you really feel like him?
Yes, I really feel like him.
And can you really picture him?
I don't understand what you mean. I said I could feel like him. Of course I could picture him.
From the outside. I mean as an adult. As you are now. Looking at him with his crew cut and his little face.
Mark closes his eyes again. A white flash fades to the smiling little boy squinting in the brilliant sunlight.
Yes.
And are you mad at him? Do you blame him for getting polio?
With her hand on his chest, she gazes deep into his eyes.
Was it his fault?
Swallowing hard, Mark breaks his stare and glances at her, then straight ahead. She delicately moves her fingers along his shoulder, then places a hand on his chest. She leaves the bed. He watches as she walks to the bathroom and flicks on the light. She leaves the door open as she enters the bathroom. He blinks with surprise. Now in the church.
She either forgot to close the bathroom door or didn't bother to close it. I found the sound of her peeing incredibly erotic. And the sound of her tearing off toilet paper incredibly intimate. By the time she came back, I had a terrific boner.
A woman hears Mark and stops her prayer. Father Brendan flashes a grin as she genuflects and leaves.
Go on.
Back in the motel room.
I'm gonna rub the tip of your penis around my vulva. And when it's ready, I'll guide you in. Breathe slowly and think of something delicious.
She straddles him as he stares up in a trance. He envisions his hand in a small waterfall, a child jogging on wet sand, and his hand stroking long blonde hair. He thinks of Amanda kissing his hand, of stroking his cat, and of running his hand through tall grass. As he pictures his hand clasped with a woman's, his neck arches. A proud smile spreads on Cheryl's face as she looks down at Mark. He closes his eyes and relaxes his head on the pillow. At the reception desk, the clerk checks his watch, then glances back toward the rooms. He faces Vera, who reads a book.
They've been a long time.
Resting her chin on the desk, she turns a page. The clerk eyes her.
You got a boyfriend?
Yes.
His head drops slightly. Now under the sheets in the motel room.
I grew up in Salem, raised Catholic, like you, but the church did not appreciate my attitude towards sex.
You had an attitude towards sex?
I did. I liked it. They think they threw me out, but I threw them out. So for years, I didn't believe in anything, and now I'm converting to Judaism.
That's good to have some kind of insurance.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Then why are you doing it?
My husband asked me to do it before his grandmother dies. The idea is if it makes her happy and him happy, it'll do the same for me. The fact that I'm already happy does not seem to be relevant.
What does your husband do?
He's a philosopher.
Wow, at a university?
No, in his own mind. He runs the house. He plays guitar. He thinks a lot.
Mark stares into her eyes and smiles. She flashes a modest grin and returns the gaze.
It's getting late.
Cheryl rolls over and sits on the edge of the bed with her back to Mark. He watches as she puts on her bra. Continuing to dress, she stands and faces him.
Hey, we did great today. You were fantastic. You're a fully fledged male homo sapien endowed with a handsome and substantial penis which now has a proven track record. You should be thrilled.
Was I really inside you?
You were really and truly inside me.
For how long?
At least 5 or 6 seconds.
Is that all?
That's a long time for some people. You were pretty excited. I don't know what you were thinking about.
Yeah, I do. I don't either. It was all a jumble of sensations.
Well, you definitely achieved penetration. It was penis, vagina all the way, and you definitely get an A for orgasm.
Cheryl resumes getting dressed.
Cheryl.
She stops and faces him.
Did you come?
No, Mark, I didn't.
Can we try for that next time?
Is that what you want?
Yes. That's what I want.
Okay, then.
She stares at Mark for a moment, then stands. He smiles with a look of pure satisfaction and watches her. Now, at night, Father Brendan stands outside Mark's front door with a six-pack of beer. He wears a kerchief bandana and civilian clothes. Rod opens the door.
Rod, how you doing?
Good. Come on in.
How are you?
Still exhausted.
Beer?
No, I'm okay.
Oh, you need a glass?
That'd be great.
He hands Rod the beer.
So, on reflection, how do you feel?
It was okay. I like some of the other stuff just as much or better, but I'm glad it's behind me.
So am I. Congratulations.
Aha. Thanks.
Thanks, Rod.
Rod hands him a glass of beer.
When this is all over, I'm going to write an article about it. After all, sex sells. Seriously.
So you're only doing this for the money?
Oh, absolutely.
That makes me feel so much better about everything.
They both smile.
What is she like, Cheryl? You've never said anything about her.
She's the most wonderful person on the planet.
On the phone with Dr. White.
How's it going?
He reads too many books.
He has it in his head that after meeting 3 times, we should be able to have penetrative sex, which results in simultaneous orgasm. Boom, just like that.
That's very funny.
I guess it is.
What do you think of him?
Cheryl looks down.
Cheryl?
I like him.
She taps her eyeglasses in her hands. Now, Cheryl climbs into bed beside her sleeping husband. A book lies open on his chest, his hands resting on top of it. Cheryl pulls the covers up. She turns her head to the side and pensively touches her fingers to her lips. She lays her hand over her heart. The couple lies in almost identical positions.
What are you thinking about?
She looks over.
Nothing.
He opens his eyes and looks at her.
I don't believe you.
She looks at him again, then smiles.
Okay,
Okay, I was just thinking about the whole conversion thing.
I still don't believe you.
He shuts the book and removes the eyeglasses resting on his forehead. He places them on his nightstand. They turn face to face, looking at each other.
Then whatever it is, I guess I'm not in the mood for talking about it.
Daytime, Mark lies in his iron lung.
So? What do you think?
He looks at the devotional Mary painting on the wall. Now, Cheryl comes home with grocery bags.
Hello, this is Cheryl.
Hi.
Mark?
Hey, can we meet somewhere for coffee?
Somewhere nice. My treat.
I don't usually meet with clients outside of working hours. You know that.
We don't have to talk business.
She smiles. At night, Cheryl dictates into her recorder.
Mark appears to be indulging in typical transference behavior. We know this is not unusual after first successful intercourse, but I think he's particularly susceptible.
She stops and drinks from a glass of water. She pushes buttons on the recorder and shakes her hair off her neck.
He cannot help but seeing me as the multifunctional, all-purpose woman, mother, sister, teacher, lover, best friend. At the same time, his anxiety about sexual performance has diminished.
She stops the recorder. She sets it on the desk. She clasps her hands and presses them to her lips. Now, a waiter passes a trickling fountain at a garden cafe. He carries a cake stand topped by a tray and two cups. He reaches Mark and Cheryl's table.
You look stunning.
She wears a floral pattern dress. The waiter puts the cake stand on their table. He hands Cheryl a cup and saucer.
Thank you.
Could you put my cup right on the edge here?
Sure.
Right on the edge.
He sets down the cup.
Can I stick the straw in my mouth, please?
Is that okay?
Perfect.
Oh, sorry, wait a couple minutes. That coffee's kind of hot.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Mark releases the straw. The waiter leaves.
So what should we talk about?
No, we don't have to do much talking. I just wanted to be seen with you in public. And I want people to say, hey, who's that gimp with that beautiful blonde? How did he get so lucky?
She smiles at him. He smiles and gazes at her.
If an old girlfriend from school you hadn't seen for years showed up here suddenly, like right now, how would you introduce me? As your boyfriend?
As my husband. Why not go all the way?
Really?
We're pretending, right? So, sure.
She gives him a small grin. At night, Mark lies in his darkened apartment.
Love poem for...
His lips remain still.
No one in particular.
He peacefully stares off.
Let me.
Daytime at Cheryl's house. Cheryl's husband gets the mail.
Let me what?
Standing on the front step, he examines an envelope. He smells it, then opens it. He pulls out a single formal note card. He furrows his brow and reads it, nodding his head a little. He jabs his tongue into his cheek, then walks back inside, letting the door slam. Later, he follows Cheryl into the dining room where she sets the table.
Really? Really, aren't you the one that's always said it can't get personal?
That's a whole other thing. What are you doing opening my mail?
Well, it was scented. I assumed it was junk mail.
Even less reason to open it. Where is it? Give it to me.
You're not getting it.
This is none of your business.
You're still not getting it. I threw it out.
Her eyes open wide.
You didn't.
I fucking did.
Tony enters the dining room.
What's up?
He looks from one parent to the other. Cheryl rubs her face. She walks over and takes Tony's face in her hands. She kisses his cheek. Later, they eat at the table. Cheryl's husband glares at her.
Could you ask your mother to pass the salt, please?
Tony wipes his mouth with a napkin.
Cheryl, would you please pass the salt?
She keeps eating without looking up. Tony glances at his father and forces a smile. Later, in their room, she lies in bed with a closed book on her belly. Her husband enters in his bathrobe and sits on the bed.
Listen, I'm sorry. No, I really upset you before.
No, you didn't. I'm fine.
You sure?
Yes.
She puts the book on her nightstand and turns off her lamp.
I promise.
Really?
Yes, in fact, I've come around to your point of view. You were right. You're usually right about these things.
She turns over. Her husband shakes his head. He lies down on top of the covers. He crosses his legs at the ankles and rubs his eyes.
It was quite a lovely poem, really. Nothing astounding, but it was heartfelt and it...
Babe?
She props herself up on her elbow.
Everything's great. I just need to get to sleep.
She gives him a little smile.
Okay. Good night.
She curls up, facing him, and pats his arm. Still in his robe, he turns off his lamp. They lie in the dark. Now outside, a lamp comes on in the window. In her nightgown and robe, Cheryl pads down the back porch steps and hurries through the dark to the garbage can. She places the lid on the ground and digs around a little until she finds the envelope. She walks back to the steps with the poem in her hands. She sits down and reads it in the dim light.
Let me touch you with my words. For my hands, I limp as empty gloves.
At daytime, Vera pushes the gurney down a sidewalk past a white picket fence. Amanda creeps up behind her and touches her shoulder. Vera turns. Amanda whispers in her ear, then takes her place. With Amanda now pushing the gurney, Mark looks up. She smiles.
Amanda.
Now in the park, she settles onto a concrete picnic bench. She smiles at Mark on his gurney.
I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to Germany. So I wanted to say goodbye to you before I left.
Why are you going to Germany?
To study German.
For how long?
One or 2 years, maybe. But, you know, we should keep in touch.
But why go to Germany? It's the only place in the world where humor is forbidden.
She looks away, blinking back tears.
What?
You can always make me laugh. I love you, Mark. I really do.
Really? Yes, I love you, but not in that way.
Now, at the church.
I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Blah, blah, blah. The same old story.
Back in the park. Amanda rises and leans over him. At a nearby table, Vera looks up from her book and watches. Amanda takes his face in her hands and kisses his lips. She lightly caresses his cheek. She picks up her purse and walks away.
I think it's great what you're doing with that surrogate lady.
It could have been you.
Yeah, it could have been, but...
He watches her leave, now in the church with Father Brendan.
I had this faint hope that she would show the slightest bit of jealousy. It shows you how naive I am. The fact that I was no longer a virgin, that I was a made man, so to speak, it made no difference to her at all.
Now Vera sits behind the motel reception desk with the clerk.
Want to go out sometime?
Vera takes a swig of beer.
No, I don't think so.
What? Your boyfriend?
No, I'm busy. That's all.
He looks away and purses his lips.
What's wrong with this anyway? We're having a nice time, aren't we?
It's okay.
He drinks his beer.
Well, if you have stuff to do, I can go take a walk if you're busy and come back later.
No, no, stay. So come on, tell me. What kind of therapist is she? Really?
I told you the first time. She's a sex therapist.
He looks at her out of the corners of his eyes.
Today they're working on simultaneous orgasm.
His eyes dart back and forth.
What's that?
In the motel room, Mark lies naked in bed. Cheryl props her naked body on her elbows beside him.
Boy, am I glad to see you.
Don't you say that to all the girls.
Yes, but I always mean it.
She looks at his face, then lowers her head. Her eyes close as their lips meet. They kiss long and tenderly. She kisses his cheek, then kisses it again.
Remember about your breathing?
She kisses his shoulder, then down his chest.
Concentrate on breathing out rather than in.
At night, she dictates at home.
Mark was able to achieve an erection as soon as I put my mouth on him. He did the controlled breathing as I suggested, and I was able to get on top and guide him in quite easily.
In the motel room, she straddles Mark. He scrunches his face, then smiles. Words on a typewriter, seeing a sex surrogate.
I couldn't believe it. I was finally there.
She smiles with pleasure.
Too soon I came, but she kept holding me inside her.
She puts her hand on his chest and tosses her head back.
Then a look of pleasure brushed lightly over her face, as though an all-day itch were finally being scratched.
She runs her hands through her long blonde hair.
She put her hands down on the bed by my shoulders and kissed my chest.
Mark's eyelids flutter as he receives her kiss to his chest.
This act of affection moved me deeply.
Cheryl kisses his neck. Now Mark lies on the gurney at the church.
I almost wept. No one had ever done anything like that.
Back in the motel room, she kisses him lightly on the lips. Her hair falls over his face. Now in the church with Father Brendan.
So unexpected. So natural.
In the motel room, Mark and Cheryl's lips slowly part. He stares up into her eyes. She smiles and nods. Now Cheryl dictates at home.
Mark is breathing well, learning to pace himself. There is no real impediment to a variety of sexual activities given the right sort of partner.
She stares with misty eyes.
His deeper emotional needs are outside the scope of my potential involvement.
Cheryl stops her recorder. At the motel, they lay shoulder to shoulder, naked in bed, as she massages his hand.
What happens when?
What happens when what?
When people become attached to each other.
What people?
Just people. What's the chemistry of it all? When people are attracted to each other.
Are you attracted to me?
God, no. You're just talking hypothetically.
Hypothetically, they write poems. They have sex.
And what happens next?
After poetry and sex, nothing or everything. The rest is by negotiation, as it were.
What do you mean?
I mean, you can leave it at love and attraction, or you can make things complicated, like most people do.
Have you?
Yes.
Now in the church with Father Brendan.
Then afterwards, there was this moment.
The priest turns and looks at him.
This glimpse of an awful sadness to come.
At the motel reception desk with the clerk, Vera checks her watch.
Can I use the phone?
Sure.
Will you call their room?
Uh-huh.
Mark and Cheryl look over at the phone. Later, fully dressed, Cheryl buttons Mark's shirt.
What should we do next time? Any requests?
Her smile becomes a concerned gaze.
Mark?
I'm thinking. We have 2 sessions left, is that correct?
That's right, or...
Or what?
Or we could stop now.
You mean make this the last session?
Yes.
He blinks as he considers this. He licks his lips.
What do you think we should do?
It's not we, it's you, Ma. It's up to you.
Yeah, I want to know how you feel.
It doesn't come into it.
Yes, it does. I don't just write poems to anyone.
Mark, what do you want me to say? How much I was touched by that? How special this has been for me? It's not going to help you. It's going to make it worse.
So you're saying the 6th session, that would be it?
That would be it. If it's any consolation, it's also hard for me to think about it.
Then maybe we should pull the plug now.
I think we should.
She hurries off the bed. He watches her put on a necklace.
Guess you might as well save that money. Buy yourself a futon.
Cheryl fixes her hair. He smiles sadly. She slings her purse over her shoulder. She looks to the door.
Just a second.
She stands by the foot of the bed, beyond Mark's field of view. She looks at him. He glances toward her and sadly smiles.
Bye, Mark.
Bye.
She picks up a full-length mirror and heads toward the door. Now, outside with Vera.
Is everything all right?
He did great. I'll see you. Sorry, I have to run.
Vera watches as Cheryl ducks away. Now, Cheryl carries the mirror through the parking lot toward her old wood-paneled station wagon. She swings open the trunk door and places the mirror inside. Grabbing the keys from her purse, the sex surrogate gets into the driver's seat. Vera rushes across the parking lot and approaches the window.
Forgot this.
Vera holds the envelope of money. Cheryl stares at it and fights back tears. She grabs the envelope and places a hand on Vera's, then stares into her eyes. Vera claps a supportive hand on Cheryl's. Cheryl's chin trembles. She glances at the envelope and mouths something to Vera, then nods. Licking her lips, Vera slowly backs away from the car. Cheryl glares at the envelope, then tosses it on the dashboard. Now, looking straight ahead with a pensive expression, Vera wheels Mark along a sidewalk. He lies on the gurney, staring upward, an expression of grief on his face. Small glimpses of sunlight shine through the tree branches above. Mark closes his eyes and allows his head to flop to the right. They continue along a row of flowering hedges. At night, outside of Cheryl's house, the envelope remains on her dash. Now, in the church, Mark stares off. His mouth hangs open.
I wanted to believe that because of Cheryl, my life had changed, but it hadn't. I just kept thinking, is that it? Is that all there is?
Father Brendan breaks his stare and turns to Mark.
I think you've done a great thing.
The priest sits beside him beneath the ornate altar. Now, Cheryl enters a gold-domed building featuring a Star of David and a menorah. Later, she wears a white bathrobe as she follows a small woman wearing a headscarf.
So is this your first time?
It is. I'm converting.
Oh, wonderful. Come here. I need to look at your hands, your fingernails, and your toenails. So what do you do?
I don't think you'd understand.
You can try me.
Okay. I'm a housewife.
Why shouldn't I understand?
Maybe I was mistaken.
Turn around and drop your robe halfway. I'm going to check for any loose hairs on your back. That looks good. I'll take the robe and you can let your hair down now. I see you're very comfortable being naked.
It's never been one of my problems.
Cheryl steps down into a bath.
Sometimes new brides come with their mothers. Do I have to take this off? Can I please leave this on? They've never been naked before. No, honey, it all has to come off.
And it does?
And it does. They stand at the edge of this pool with nothing to cling to but themselves. Nothing to hide behind. This is your body. This is the body that God crafted for you.
Cheryl submerges in the bath.
Okay, Monk. You can open your eyes now.
At the motel room, Cheryl holds the full-length mirror at the end of the bed. Mark stares at his naked reflection.
This is your body.
He raises his eyebrows and smiles pleasantly, holding back tears. Now, in the mikveh bath, Cheryl emerges.
This is your body.
Now at night, traffic moves across the towering Golden Gate Bridge. In his darkened apartment, Mark lies awake in his iron lung. His mouth stick rests within reach as he adjusts his head. Mark grimaces. The clock reads 12 after 10. The pump on his iron lung slowly deflates. Mark glances nervously around his dark apartment and out the window. He listens for a moment, then grabs his mouth stick. A phone rests on the nightstand in front of his face. Positioning the stick between his teeth, he carefully drags the phone little by little within reach. He makes several attempts to tap a specific button and successfully dials.
The person you are calling is not in. Please leave a message.
Rod, I need your help. The power's gone out, including the pump on the iron lung. Let's say I got about 3 hours before I start to turn blue. I hope you get this in time. It's Mark. I'll try 911.
Mark quickly bites the mouth stick and taps at a different button, but misses. Extending his neck and chin, he tries to dial. He drops his stick.
Oh! Shit.
He lowers his chin and rests his head back on the pillow. Slowly turning, he faces the ceiling. Mark lies alone in his dark apartment.
So this is how it ends.
He swallows hard and stares upward. Breathing calmly, Mark blinks several times and then closes his eyes. The screen cuts to black. Now our view shifts to a ceiling where fluorescent lights speed by. Mark wears an oxygen mask as EMTs rush his gurney down the hall. The screen cuts to black. Now a woman with long brown hair stands by his hospital bed. Her name tag reads Susan.
They'll be letting you go today. Whoever looks after you will leave the portable respirator switched on at night, fully charged, so you'll have at least one backup system. Okay?
Okay. How close was I?
To what?
You know, to that tunnel thing and the light and the voice saying, don't go near the light.
Is that what you remember?
No, I assume I passed out. And before that, I remember feeling sorry for myself.
She tilts her head and nods.
Do you feel relieved now?
No. Relieved Rock got to me in time, but I still feel sorry for myself.
Well, I'm sure there's a cure for that. Do you want to talk to someone, or...?
I feel comfortable talking to you.
She smiles warmly.
Well, I'm just a volunteer. I'm not a therapist. So. I can recommend you to someone if you like.
I'm sorry to be rude. I'm just smiling at the idea that a therapist could do anything useful for me right now. My priest couldn't.
Are you religious?
Yes, I would find it absolutely intolerable not to be able to blame someone for all this.
She sits in a chair by the bed.
Are you?
No. I don't go to any church. I don't think about God very much. I do believe there's a mysterious logic or poetry to life. I guess that makes me a spiritual type.
Ah, yes. That would count.
She smiles. Later, Susan walks beside Mark as he leaves the hospital.
Would you like me to visit you?
Are you married?
No.
Do you have a steady boyfriend?
She smiles.
No.
Then please visit as often as you can.
Now by an ambulance.
Hi.
Hi.
Take care.
Hey, hang on a second. There's just one more thing I want to tell you.
She leans in over his gurney.
I'm not a virgin.
A smile spreads on her kind face.
Go ahead.
The paramedics lift Mark into the ambulance and she moves behind them.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
Sure.
They situate Mark inside and close the doors. Now at home, Father Brendan faces Mark, who lies in his iron lung.
I'm flabbergasted.
She adores me. She'll do anything for me, and I can get pretty kinky sometimes.
Here I was ready to offer comfort to the forlorn. It's supposed to be my specialty. Well, I guess I can throw away that little speech.
No, no. Please, make the little speech. I'd love to hear it.
Okay, fine. Here goes. The meaning of love. Love is a journey.
I like it already.
Father Brendan nods with a grin, then raises his brow and shrugs.
That's it. That's all I've got. I told you, it's short. Love is a journey.
Mark smiles wide. Now Father Brendan leaves Mark's apartment and stops on the front porch. He pulls out a cigarette and smiles, then searches his pockets for a lighter. In a flashback at the hospital, Susan watches the ambulance pull away with Mark.
I met Susan 5 years before I died. She was the love of my life. We had the same priorities. Baseball pretty much came first. And we wrote each other mushy poems. I never expected it, nor did she, but that's often the way things turn out.
Cheryl's husband hands her a letter.
Susan Fernbach.
Now mourners assemble at Mark's funeral.
They say there is a cup of life, which is either half empty or half full, depending on how you feel about things. Of course, the two halves were never even. Not in my case, that's for sure. Look at all the years of unendurable crap I've had to put up with. That fills most of the cup. But in the little bit that's left, what do I have to show for myself? At the very least, 3 beautiful women who all loved me and who will all show up at my funeral.
His was a dynamic voice in a paralyzed body. A life lived fully long after he should have been dead. And against all odds, by Mark's own admission, he knew love. Emotional and physical love. And in this way, Mark lived his life, day by day by day, breath by breath by breath, for 49 years. He loved, and he was loved.
Sitting with her husband, Cheryl smiles at Father Brendan.
And now, Susan Fernbach will read one of Mark's favorite poems.
With her eyes welled up, Susan approaches a small wooden podium carved as a bald eagle. The grieving beauty scans the congregation.
This is called Love Poem for No One in Particular.
Cheryl's cheeks slightly drop as she grins sadly.
Let me touch you with my words. For my hands,
lie limp as empty gloves. Let my words stroke your hair. Slide down your back and tickle your belly. For my hands, light and free-flying as bricks, ignore my wishes and stubbornly refuse to carry out my quietest desires. Let my words enter your mind, bearing torches,
Admit them willingly into your being, so they may caress you gently within.
Susan and Cheryl lock eyes as she finishes the poem. She holds the paper up, motioning to Cheryl, who returns a slight nod. The golden statue of Jesus shines above the church's altar. Mark's coffin rests beneath, draped in purple cloth with white lilies lying atop. At night, in Mark's dark, vacant apartment, the iron lung rests in the corner. Fade to black. In memory of Mark O'Brien, and based on his article on seeing a sex surrogate. Remaining opening credits: costume designer Justine Seymour, production designer John Mott, editor Lisa Bromwell, ACE, director of photography Jeffrey Simpson, ACS, executive producer Maurice Silman, executive producer Julius Coleman, executive producer Douglas Blake, produced by Judy Levine, Stephen Nemeth, Ben Lewin, written for the screen and directed by Ben Lewin. Credits roll. Unit Production Manager Douglas Blake, First Assistant Director David Dwiggins, Second Assistant Director Ben Bywater, made in association with Dune Entertainment. Cast: John Hawkes as Mark, Helen Hunt as Cheryl, William H. Macy as Father Brendan, Moon Bloodgood as Vera, Annika Marks as Amanda, Adam Arkin as Josh, Rhea Perlman as Mikvah Lady, W. Earl Brown as Rod, Robin Weigart as Susan, Blake Lindsley as Dr. Laura White, Ming Lo as Clerk, Rusty Schwimmer as Joan, Jennifer Kumiyama as Carmen, Tobias Forrest as Greg, Jared Bailey as Tony, James Martinez as Matt, Paul McLean as Young Mark, Phoebe Lewin as Girl on Beach, Jonathan Hanrahan as Unicyclist, Jason Jack Edwards as Waiter, J. Teddy Garces as Man in Elevator, Daniel Quinn as ER Doctor, B.J. Klinkscales as Ambulance Driver, Terry as Cat. Production: Production Supervisor Rebecca Sandoris. Production Coordinators Nicoletta Lingroso, Josh McClintock. Script Supervisor Ticia Esposito. Special Consultants Cheryl Cohen-Green, Susan Fernbach. Sound Mixer Marty Kasparian. Boom Operator Brad Kalpikoff. Post-Production: Post-Production Supervisor John Portnoy. Post-Production Coordinator Alexandra Lewin. Music Supervisor Sharon Smith. Poems: Mrs. Garcia, The Man in the Iron Lung, poems by Mark O'Brien. Tracy Would Have Been a Pretty Girl, The Man in the Iron Lung, poems by Mark O'Brien. Breathing, The Man in the Iron Lung, poems by Mark O'Brien. Love Poem for No One in Particular, by Mark O'Brien. Love and Baseball, poems on America's favorite pastimes, Mark O'Brien and Susan Fernbach. Graduation Day, by Mark O'Brien. Songs: Fine Wine Tasting for Two, written by Bradley P. Hatfield, performed by Brad Hatfield Quintet. Closer, written by Stephen R. Galloway, performed by Steve Galloway. CMP 231 Russian Romance, written and performed by Udi Harpaz. CMI 3317 Shearing Lounge, written and performed by Stephen Michael Yeager. I Go All to Pieces, written by Jeffrey S. Megan, performed by Jeff Megan. Iron Lung, generously supplied by Rancho Los Amigos National Rehabilitation Center. American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. This motion picture is based on actual events. Some incidents, characters, and timelines may have been changed for dramatic purposes. Certain characters may be composites or entirely fictitious. This motion picture is protected by the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, copying, or use of all or part of the motion picture may result in civil liabilities and/or criminal prosecution in accordance with applicable laws. Copyright 2012 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and Dune Entertainment 3 LLC in all territories except Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. Copyright 2012 TCF Hungary Film Rights Exploitation Limited Liability Company, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation, and Dune Entertainment 3 LLC in Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Fox Searchlight. Read by Tansy Alexander. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Logos. Such Much Films. Rhino Films.